Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, this is Rocky, and I want to thank you for listening to Professor Gary Lee's Parts Unknown Show on the best AMAA Masters and Pioneers Radio Network. The best sports karate interviews, special announcements, and special surprises each week on this Tuesday night. Professor Gary Lee has a knockout punch every week for your enjoyment. Supporting the Sports Karate Museum Archives and the history in America. It ain't about how hard you get hit. It's about how hard you can get hit to keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Yo, Professor Gary Lee, great job.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Guys, I'm so excited tonight. My name is Professor Gary Lee, and I've been doing the Parts Unknown now for almost 9 years. And, you know, every show is exciting. But tonight, I'm very excited. Let me explain why. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine who passed away recently, Mr. Jim Harrison, asked me to put together a group of military advisors. And I did. People like Danny Lane, Danny McCall, Lonnie Walker, Colonel Ike Slaughter, our special guest tonight, Colonel Phil Torres, Colonel Steve Vitale, General Tom Mulligan. I mean, just to name a few, Dean Piles, an amazing group of people. And then I asked a man who's also my co-host to be the spokesman for this group. And I'm going to introduce these two people right now. Now, it's really, really special because tonight I have a very, very special guest on the 6th, and I'll introduce him in a few minutes. But first of all, let me introduce the two guys that put up with me every week. The first one is a NASCAR world champion many times. He's well-known throughout the martial art world. He's a 9th-degree black belt. I'm talking about Mr. Dean Piles. Dean, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, sir. And while I'm here, I will ask everyone, just so I don't forget, to make sure they keep their phone off because the background noise will make it where we can't hear the special guest. And since he is Colonel Torres, I want to make sure that his words are heard because, like in the Corps, it's better for us to step on your toes than put a boot in your, well, you know. So keep it off because I got a bunch of noise going on in the back of mine, so I'll keep mine off. But I thank you, sir, and yes, I'm here. Look forward to tonight.
Thank you, Dean. Yeah, I'm excited.
Hey, Dean.
Now, my other co-host
that
puts up with me, and he's a great guy. He's my Yankee friend from up north, up in Ohio, and he's a Black Belt Hall of Famer. He is the spokesman for the advisors I just mentioned. Amazing group of people. I'm talking about Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J., you there?
How are you, sir? Thanks for the nice introduction.
Well, I'm excited about tonight because, you know, all those guys I mentioned, Mr. Harrison, rest in peace, asked me to put them together and form an advisory group, which you're the spokesman, where we give out military diplomas from the museum to
very honored for that position. Thank you.
Well, throughout the country, and because of you and many of the guys that I've mentioned, we've got to honor the military within our group of the Sport Karate Museum. Now, I'm going to introduce someone very special, and I hope I'm worthy enough afterwards that he'll like me. Now, I'm talking about a man that is, first of all, he's a Marine. Secondly, he's a Silver Star recipient, and he is also an old-school black belt karate animal. He trained in Okinawa, like my Uncle Jerry Smith did. I mean, this guy is amazing. He actually won, I believe, a Sika championship back in the day when the Southeastern Karate Association had their championship. We'll talk about that. But I'm talking about an amazing American hero. Colonel, retired, Phil Torres. Uncle Phil, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
How are you tonight?
I am doing fantastic, and it is an honor to be among such a select group of people that I truly admire.
Well, we want to thank you, sir, because you're kind of like the cornerstone of all those advisors. You've been with me a while, and you understand the passion of the museum, and you understand the passion of honoring, you know, sport karate and the history. But let's talk about you a little bit. Let's talk about when you were in Okinawa training and you started. Tell me about who you trained with and your beginnings, please.
I didn't start training in Okinawa. I started training before I came in the Marine Corps in 1961 in New York City,
yeah,
in the basement of a Catholic church in the South Bronx. That's when I started.
Okay, my
that also gave me the passion to consider a challenging life, and that's when the Marine Corps came into play. So I was already a competitive person when I joined the Marine Corps in the mid 60s. I was in the process of doing what one of the people that I knew had recently done. Once I became a brown belt, I was considering doing what Peter Urban, Grandmaster Peter Urban, did, and that is go off to Japan for several years, study under the masters, and then come back and establish his own style, USA Goju.
Yes.
I was torn between going off to Japan and joining the Marine Corps. And what I found out is that by joining the Marine Corps, I was able to accomplish both of my passions. I became a Marine, and I also got a chance to study at the well of knowledge at the birthplace of karate, Okinawa.
Well, how did you meet Shimabuku?
Annie spent a whole lot of time with Shimabuku. I spent a lot of time with his number one student, which was Angi Uesu of Ishinru Karate. And he took me under his wing when I went to Okinawa in the 70s. I had already been in the martial arts of about 12 years at that time. He took me under his wing. Prior to that, I was learning with one of his students, Carl Hovey, who really caused me to switch from Shotokan Karate to Ishinru Karate. And then Carl Hovey and I traveled the country together, competing in different tournaments throughout the 70s.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Now, I know that you won the Sika Championship, correct?
I did in 1975. I also fought for the All Okinawan Grand Championship. I actually fought for the Grand Championship once I got to Okinawa, and that's how I met my other Okinawan sensei. That was Grandmaster Fusei Kise, head of the Shorinru Kenshinkan Karate. I fought for the finals with his son, and we went into overtime, so I impressed him. And he kind of took me under his wing and pulled me over from Ishinru into Shorinru, and then he and I also became very close.
Okay, Colonel, this is called Parts Unknown, so I'm going to take you into a venture. There's a rumor that you beat the crap out of some people in New York City, and in the bathroom, someone pulled a gun on you. Is that true or is that a rumor?
It is not, well, the details are not exactly like that, but the incident is correct.
Wow, it's not a rumor.
in 1976, we had a tribute to the master when Grandmaster Tatsuo Shimabuku passed away in Okinawa. He was the head of the Ishinru system. He was the founder of Ishinru in 55. In 1976, he passed away. So in 76, we had a tribute to the master, and people came from all over the world. Not only Ishinru people, but others came from all over the world to pay tribute to the master who had just passed away. And we had a big tournament at Madison Square Garden in Manhattan. I was a fairly good fighter. I was a strong fighter, and I wound up being paired with a sensei from New England, who was liked by a lot of people. I was an outsider. I was stationed at Quantico, Virginia. The people in New York not know me. They not know of me. Everybody knew him and his whole. All of his students were there. What happened is I heard that he was pretty good, so I stood on. I told myself, I'm not going to give this guy a chance to do anything. So as soon as we bowed in and got into our spins, I put a front thrust kick into his belly, and he folded over and went down. Point me, the stranger.
That's awesome.
So all his students were kind of looking at him, okay, get back up, point, got into our stance again, and immediately after we got into our stance, I did the exact same technique, and it had the same exact effect. I pounced into his belly, and he went down. And this time it took him a little while longer to get up.
Well, okay, you pissed off some people. How did you get a gun pointed at you?
I pissed off his entire class and their friends. I won the fight, and then I started to go walk away to the corner of the area where we were having the event, to talk to some of my friends, Carl Hovey and I traveled together to New York City. So I went over to talk to him, and the next thing I knew, I had a .38 revolver in my ribs. This was on the floor. This was on the floor. This was not in the bathroom.
Okay.
So they started to walk me outside so they can shoot me. Carl Hovey and a couple of others interfered, managed to take the gun away so that I can be here tonight.
Well, I'm so thankful. And okay, Colonel, listen, I'm so excited to be on the show tonight, and I love telling people the story how we met in San Antonio. It was all because of Kata. You know, and you're a car animal, and you're a fighter, but, you know, the one thing that you've done, you have supported the Sport Karate Museum with your whole heart and passion, and actually, you've been a guest speaker at my event. Now, before we do the six, I want you to kind of share how you feel about the Sport Karate Museum and the future of the National Sport Karate Museum honoring sport karate.
Well, to begin with, to be able to meet a person with such passion going on decades, creating a dream and then having that dream come to fruition, your dream, it was just an honor to be able to be involved with you to help create what you are trying to do, because not only is it is your dream, but it is our dream also to make sure that we don't lose track of the history of how we came about, and to continue the tradition of sports karate and martial arts in general.
Yes, sir. Well, you know what, sir, and I mean this from the heart. You know, Tammy and I both, we love you deeply, and we love the fact that I can get you on a one-on-one basis like this. So don't go nowhere. I'm going to bring you back. We're going to play the Legends Name Game, where I'll hit you with a name, and you got 2 minutes to talk about that person. So stay on the air. Don't go nowhere, Colonel, because you're going to enjoy the rest of the show.
Yes, sir.
Okay, sir? Good. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited, as you can tell. I'm talking to I call him Uncle Phil Torres. He's a colonel, retired, Marine, and he's an official. Well, he's a big part of the museum. And we'll be right back with the colonel. But this is one of my favorite parts of the week. I've created something very special. It's called The Six. Now, we have 6 martial artists around the country to participate in this. And what we do is
talk about... Hey, Professor, hang on. Is that you rattling around, or is that somebody else's phone?
I don't know who that is.
Put your phone on. Okay, I'm just telling everybody to put their phone on mute so we can hear you and the colonel.
Thank you.
Because somebody's
so anyway, The Six is very important because it's 6 people with opinions on how they feel about certain things, various topics that we talk about. And then we have a very special guest, and tonight we do. This is a man that has believed in the museum, helped create a book, created The Ring, and he has actually put me on the air for 9 years. I'm talking about my producer, Hanchi Jesse Bowen from Elite Publications. Hanchi, are you there, sir? Hanchi? Jesse Bowen? Okay,
hey, sir, how you doing?
Oh, there he is.
Hey.
How's it going? Being a special guest on The Six tonight, sir.
Well, it's great. Well, and guess what? This as a show, as the program of that overall, this is show number 700.
Wow. Well, the question tonight as a special guest is, you know, how has the martial art in general, you know, been influenced by the military, and how has the military been influenced by the martial arts? That's you, Jesse Bowen.
Well, you know, my teacher, Grandmaster, or O-Sensei Jan Willendorf, he was military, but, you know, when martial artists, a lot of them that teaching our martial arts because of that their stay in Okinawa and in Korea, they learned about the martial arts, and they began to bring it back to the United States. And in many times in the early days, we really didn't know what was going on, but just the bringing it back to the U.S. gave a new sense of fighting, of how to defend yourself, and then that discipline that was learned was brought back, and people began to understand and use that. And I just could not even imagine where I would be today in my own life if it wasn't for the martial arts and for that opportunity for it to arrive in the U.S. And we have to realize that the martial arts in the U.S. is still very young, and we're learning more and more. There's been a whole evolution behind the martial arts from the early days of being, you know, brought here to where we are now. And in the military, our special forces and the different groups that are what we call our elite fighters, you know, they're not doing sport karate. You know, karate in the hand-to-hand combat situations really has helped our know, special forces, our military overall, to be able to be one of the best in the world. My daughter She's Air Force, and I'm really grateful because the military of a young person not knowing quite what they wanted to do, the military provided an opportunity for them to get those life skills. And just like in our martial arts dojos and dojangs, we provide those life skills. Well, the military has changed the lives and trajectory of so many young people that were heading down a wrong road, but that discipline of our military has been a really big part of the saving grace of, you know, so many people. But, you know, the martial arts and its influence, which, again, you know, I'm here in near Jacksonville, North Carolina, which was one of their earlier dojos that, you know, that got started and still operates at Camp Lejeune, is still here. So the impact of the martial arts or the martial arts into the military, the ability for that to be brought back to the U.S. and then for it to be become a standard that we actually live by, especially as martial artists teaching.
Yes, sir. Well, that's very special, and I appreciate you so much, Jesse Bowen, and your vision. And, you know, being a special guest on the 6th, we want to say thank you so much for your time and your effort to be able to put us on the air for as long as you have. Now, moving right along,
hey,
the ladies.
And, sir, I'd like to say one thing.
Oh, yes, sir.
And, I was asked last week, we're putting up a link tonight. You know, we are starting a global humanitarian part of our organization, a fundraiser or a scholarship to be able to support people around the world. And so that link for support will actually be up on the radio page probably within the next hour. So if you'd like to participate in that, please do. We're going to send you copies of the Bill Wallace magazine. The magazine, the proceeds from that will be going to our Ukraine project for humanitarian efforts in that. So you can go to the AMAA, Martial Arts Masters and Pioneers radio show page. Please share that. You know, please, if you're a martial arts instructor, you know, this is a great time for your students can that they can see that they can participate. You know, by doing a kickathon, raising money, let's bring an awareness and a support in our communities, not just for Ukraine, because as we've had things happen in the past, we're also going to have them happen in the future. And the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation, we want to be there to be able to support. So thank you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you for your vision and your effort to do that. And we appreciate it so much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Humpty Jesse Bowen from Elite Publications. Now, moving right along, we could have chose any woman to be on the 6th, but we chose one. And this woman is amazing. She's a former PKL champion. She trained in Shaolin Karate Do. She was personal friends with the great Peter Urban. And you know what? She also does Kung Fu. I don't hold that against her. In fact, I love her. But she's an amazing one. I'll take Brian just to give it to you. She brought me the suitcase that Peter Urban walked around with to be put in the museum a couple years ago. That's how special she is, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about the amazing Karen Slatcher. Hey, Karen.
Hey, Gary. That was some suitcase, wasn't it, where he wrote the Chinatown
Dojo? Oh, man.
Dojo.
But to know that Peter Urban walked around the country with that suitcase and it's in the museum, that is so powerful. But the question tonight is real simple. How the martial arts help the military or influence the military, or how the military has been influenced by the martial arts?
In my case, back in the late 50s, all of my teachers from the 50s on up until the 90s, they were all military. They all came from the military. And back in the 60s, it was an amazing thing to meet a Sandan because most of them trained over there and got their black belt. And then came back from Okinawa or Japan. or Korea, wherever they went. And so, you know, they were still on fire. They had that Shodan mentality that was the passion and the fire. And they taught us the way they were taught. And it was tough. And we you know, no air conditioning, no back, you know. But we loved it. And we were taught a certain kind of discipline that they just can't teach now. But I will say the military brought me my teachers, but they also took them away. I lost my dearest teacher to Vietnam. And when he came back, he wasn't the same for years. I lost one of my Marine Corps teachers to Gulf War, the first one, and then the second one. And then I had two teachers that were Rangers during the Korean War, and it affected them. They were not like other people, you know.
Well, you know what, Karen? I remember getting on the plane. I was 14 years old with Toshiro, and Bobby Lowe put me on there. I don't laugh at me, but I thought a fifth-degree black belt lived underneath a waterfall in Okinawa, Japan, somewhere. I never dreamed I'd meet a Yodan or a Shihan, or let alone a ninth or tenth-degree black belt. I mean, but, you know, it has changed a lot, and I appreciate your opinion so much. Now, moving right along, ladies and gentlemen, part of the segment is a man very special to my heart. D.E., did you get on yet?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, there he is. Let me introduce you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a young man that I've known for a long time, ever since he was an orange belt. But now he is the president of the AOK, the Amateur Organization of Karate in Texas, the largest sport karate association in Texas. But that's not the big deal. The big deal is that he's won over 5 Bowden Green MVP awards. Now, I say this to you because it took me 17 years to win just one. But this guy's won 5 or more. I lose count. But I'm talking about the one, the only, David Chambers. D.E., is that introduction getting better each week?
Well, I'm feeling it now. I'm getting excited about the person you're talking about.
Well, how do you feel the military played a part in the martial arts? How does the martial arts play a part in the military? I mean, how do they help each other?
I just talked to my staff on the day before yesterday, and I was in search of a color guard. I said I needed to get me a color guard because we have our tournament coming up on May the 14th. And I said, I wanted to open with a color guard. And I'm blessed. You know, we're doing probably the most production that we've ever done for a tournament before as we're doing for this year. And I'm really excited about that. And I kept saying it would really be set off if we can, you know, have a good, strong color guard to come in. My point is that the military has a certain respect.
Amen.
Due to them. And I mean, when I say do, meaning that's not something that they got because it was just given. That's something that they earned. And that's appreciated. And the art, my belief is the martial art coincides so well with it. I'm looking diligent for that color guard, that right one, to be able to perform at the first, just to walk in. And all they're going to do is walk in and present the flag. But that is a very, very solid, strong tradition.
Yeah.
And even though nothing is said, whatsoever, but everybody understands that. There's no need for words because of the tradition, because of what they've earned. And my belief is that they are almost the same. I believe the martial art is almost the same because the tenets are very similar. Right now, some of the training that they get in the martial art, in the service, you know, is the same, just more realistic that we do in the martial art. So a lot of it teaches that life skill. I look at them to be so similar. And it because it's similar, I don't say it affects one another. I say it is one another. I mean, I believe the martial art and the service is the same. That's my belief. I'm not going to say that it has an effect or don't have an effect, but I am going to say
brother.
That it is the same.
Okay, little brother, I'm going to give you 2 minutes. That's it. Then I'm going to bring up the hook. You got 2 minutes to talk about your incredible tournament, Christmas in May. 2 minutes.
Well, I'm going to talk fast, man. We are excited. That, we are excited. This is our 31st annual. I look for Mr. Powell to show up and come out there and grace us with his appearance and his team. We won a few tournaments that we give away bicycles for first place. Can you imagine that? We give away bicycles for first place to all the kids. Now, we give away, for the ones who don't win, we give away Christmas toys. We give out Christmas toys to the ones. That's why it's better known as Christmas in May. We have a breakfast meeting at 8:15 for the judges. We serve them breakfast. We have a 84-inch screen for you, because we have two different gymnasiums. So if you want to watch what's going on in the other gymnasium, you get to see it. We also have given out a Lifetime Achievement Award for Grandmaster Fred A. Simon. I'm so excited about that. We give him a Lifetime Achievement Award there. The one who's running for governor of Texas, Michael Cooper, he's running for governor of Texas. He's going to be there to open the event, and he's going to actually give prayer. So, you know, we are excited about May the 14th. It's Houston, Texas. It's the 31st annual Houston International Christmas in May. I do humbly invite everybody to there to say to come to one of the best times you're going to ever see, some of the best atmosphere, and we got some of the turkey legs. We know about what turkey legs.
Well, we're doing something special
biggest
for
ones
you,
in Texas.
D, we're going to do something special for you. The Fort Collins Museum, your grand champion in the adult and the grand champion in the kids, we're going to give them a seed at Cotter Wars October 8th at Judge Kerbin's event. So we're doing that because you do bring out the best, the competitors, and, you know, we're a big cabin, big kid, I'm trying to speak, kid advocate at the museum, and I know you are too. In fact, for years, you and I were the only guys to give out bicycles at our event. I remember that. We still do.
Yeah.
So that's great. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was the amazing David Chambers, the president of the AOK. Now, moving right along, this is a fun introduction here. He's a Marine, a PhD. He is the founder of the Black Karate Federation. And right now, he is the president of the Black Karate Federation. But he was a Marine, and he grew up under the tutelage of Mr. Joe Lewis, the great Joe Lewis. And I'm talking about, he's like an uncle to me, so I'm going to say it. He's Uncle Jerry Smith. Uncle Jerry, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you feeling? I know you had surgery on your eye and everything. Are you feeling better?
Oh, yeah. I can see again. I was blind in one eye for almost 2.5 years.
Well, we missed you. We missed you.
I didn't say very much about it because it wasn't fun.
Yeah. I just want to say we missed you last week, and I'm so glad you're back. But here's a magic question. When I brought it up, I thought about you. How has the military helped the martial arts, and how has the martial arts helped the military? You had a great answer today. I love it. Just share it with us, sir.
Well, most of the iconic martial artists that we know, people that you talk about a lot, actually studied martial arts in the Orient, and they brought it back and shared it here in America. Now, for instance, being a young guy and having, you know, of course I love the Marine Corps. Once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine. But the reason why I joined the Marine Corps was it was the only way I could get to the Orient to study martial arts. I was that possessed about it. It was my passion, so I joined the Marine Corps, and I got to study on Okinawa, and I got to come back. So I think if you look at people like Chuck Norris and a lot of the guys, of the iconic Marines were Jim Harris, and a lot of those guys were in the military. So the military plays a big, big part in martial arts in America here.
Well, we're just so excited to have you on the six, and you're such a big part of the museum, and I'm just so glad to have you back on the air with me. And don't go nowhere. I'm going to bring on someone very special to you. He's one of your proteges. Now, I'm talking about the man that has taken over the webpage of the Sport Karate Museum, but he's a professor. He teaches martial arts. He grew up under many instructors, but particularly Uncle Jerry Smith. And I'm talking about Professor Tom Spellman. Tom, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. I am.
What a great show tonight. But how do you feel about the military affecting the martial arts and the martial arts affecting the military?
Well, you know, there's a very background of that relationship between the military and, you know, martial arts, self-defense, all that kind of thing. We can even look back to the 1920s in Shanghai when William Fairbairn created Defendu, that eventually became the Shanghai Riot Squad practices that was a prototype for a lot of the SWAT teams that we have today. He later on had a protege by the name of Dermot O'Neill, who took his system because he had studied with him while there at Shanghai Municipal Police and eventually developed it so that it was adopted during the 30s and then eventually into World War II, specifically to the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, which eventually became the CIA. And he taught this to them, so that when they went into behind the lines and things over in France and other places during the war, they could have a self-defense because they could not always have weapons because it was too easy to identify them, you know. And he was eventually the guy that fought the Special Service Force, which is we know as the Devil's Brigade, American-Canadian commando group that was in World War II from 42 to 44. And, of course, a movie made about them. So, you know, there is this evolution of Chinese martial arts mixed with judo and jiu-jitsu and all kinds of other stuff that eventually came to us. And I still remember the skill system in various different forms back in the 60s being taught to various groups, including the Army cadets and things like that. Now,
yeah.
You know, we talk about Vietnam, okay? So in Vietnam, we had kind of two eras. There was the advisor era between 55 and 65, where we had the first waves where they were advisors, where they're then, you know, military units in large, you know, numbers. And it was during that period that my instructor, Thomas White, and Chorin Rue, and Joe Lewis were both there. And they trained side by side in Shimabukuro Ezo's dojo. Back in that period. And then, of course, after March 8th in 1965, 3,500 Marines of the 9th Marine Expeditionary Brigade arrived in Da Nang. And it was there after that period of time that my other instructor, Jerry Smith, went over as a Marine and was there for that period. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that it wasn't just, just didn't start all of a sudden at the end of the war. It was going on much longer than that. And, of course, nowadays we have this turnaround where we have a martial art that is something that was born in the Marine Corps, the MCMAP, group, and they have their own belt systems and everything else, and their development is at Quantico. And one of my instructors, Jack Hoban, was a U.S. Marine captain, and he was assisted in the creation of the program and remains a subject matter expert for the program even today. And he did Bujinkan Budo Taijutsu from Grandmaster Hatsumi. So ninjutsu was his contribution, as well as a bunch of other values that were involved in it. So the
Professor Spellman,
incredible. Yes, sir.
Colonel Torres was involved in the inception of Mi'kmaq.
Well, there you go. You know, that's one of the great things about it. They had such a huge influx of so many different martial artists, so many different directions to try and, you know, fill every gap and make it the very best it could be. And so, you know, there's the martial arts from various different traditions all coming together with exponents who had, you know, high levels of understanding and passion for it. And they developed one of the most comprehensive things that we could possibly imagine. And it was a joint, but it took the Marine Corps and took the United States military to be able to fund, protect, and to advance it to the stage that it's become today. So, all of
us. That's the reason why we call you the professor. Such an amount of knowledge, and I know my listeners appreciate that so much. Now, I appreciate you too, buddy, for what you're doing for the webpage and putting the pictures of everybody. And for people who want to go and and see Professor Tom Spellman's work, you can go to www.sportkarateseumarchives.com, and you can see some of the incredible work that Professor Tom Spellman does. Now, the last part of the six is very important because it's the last two. Not that they're better in their opinion, but these guys are my co-hosts. And the first one I'm going to introduce is the spokesman of the military group of the advisors of the museum. I'm talking about Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J., you there, buddy?
How are you?
I'm good. What a great show tonight.
I appreciate the nice introduction.
How does the military affect the martial arts, and how did the martial arts affect the military, buddy?
Well, a lot of it started when Commodore Perry sailed into Tokyo Harbor back in the early 1870s. That marked the end of the samurai. But with that being said, a lot of the American military were exposed to jiu-jitsu at that time. And, you know, it kind of evolved from there. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, one of our presidents, he was an avid jiu-jitsu and judo player. He practiced, you know, very much, you know, a lot. And then, you know, it started during World War One. They started, you know, teaching judo-type throws, you know, for self-defense in their training. And then during World War Two, people like, you know, Robert Trias came back after their time in Okinawa, you know, training Shirite. And then it kind of evolved from there where, like Dale Drouillard back in the early 50s, you know, he was the first American to get, black belt in Korean martial arts. So it kind of evolved, you know, actually from back in the 1800s and then evolved from there after, you know, more of our exposure in Asia, you know, especially, you know, we were also exposed to the French, where they were over there for years, and they brought it back, and they called it Savat. So, you know, it's been around for a long time. So it's not something that, you know, happened just in World War
Two. The military is very disciplined, and people immediately think discipline when they think about martial arts. So it does tie in together deeply. So, AJ, thank you so much. And the other cohort, the animal, Dean Pyle. Are you there, Dean? Dean, quit knocking people
yes,
out.
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Okay.
I had to come off the floor. Sorry. I've been listening,
I know, buddy. So listen, the question for you tonight on the 6th, how did the military affect the martial arts? How does the martial arts affect the military? You got to keep it short and sweet, baby. Go ahead.
Okay, short and sweet. I'm sure people's been given a breakdown on the history and all that, so there's no sense in to go into that. But short and sweet, the military enhances martial art by pronouncing its effectiveness as far as making the techniques more realistic or practicing them in a way of more realism, if that makes sense. And for the martial arts, for it helping, for the martial arts helping it, it gives it, it just continues to add to that discipline and to provide those tools that the military can sharpen and turn around to use as skills to defend America. How's that? Was that short and sweet enough?
You can go back to knocking somebody out, because I'm going to bring you back in a minute for your alias. So don't go too far, okay? Okay.
All right.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've been waiting all day to say this because I'm excited. A year ago, I got involved with this, and we're creating virtual reality on the Oculus Quest 2. But we wanted to create not only, a platform, but we wanted to create what they call the History General Portals. This is where you can go in after you fight the hologram that these incredible men created. You can go into a portal. Now, we had to start with a core group, and we've got it official. I got these people who are going to be the core group, and then every month we're going to add a new history deal. Now, I'm excited. Everybody has something that they've given to sport karate. Now, I'm excited about this. Mr. Mike Dillard, the owner of Black Belt Magazine, and the creator and founder of Century Martial Arts. He is the official core group. Mr. Roy Kervin, who invented the two-point kick for Karate Do. Mr. George Minshew, who brought the first gold ring to competition. And the lovely Chris Minshew, who is the NBL world champion. Now, they'll be the core group, and then we'll add a new history general every month, and you can check it out, the demo, by going to Google and just type in SETDR.APP. But I got something special. I got one of the inventors on the line, and he can tell you in depth about what self-enhanced training in virtual reality is. Dr. Lee, Reggie.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you can tell I'm excited. We've worked hard
yes, we have.
Putting that core group together. But tell our listeners, what exactly is SETDR? Now, before you do, you will be there in October at Roy Kerbin's event, and you will be having the headsets, and people can try them on. But go ahead and tell our listeners what exactly is the SETDR.app.
Yes, I first wanted to thank you for allowing SETDR to honor your core group of history generals on a SETDR program in regards to the program that we're going to be planning to have. In response to some members of the audience that the environment in SETDR program may appear too dark, and that's something we had discussed about, Professor Gary Lee, that some members of the audience said that some of our programs on the platform were appearing too dark. I would like to respond by quoting my late Sensei Richard Wigginton, who was also a Marine, who has been highly respected in the martial arts community. Bad things usually happen at night in dark places. SETDR not only focuses on developing a reflex response, but also focusing on a threat level. The threat level increases with dark environments, as, for example, in our program with the alleyway and in the park alone scenario, which appears in a dark places. The threat level also increases when one invades your personal space. The hologram is programmed to invade your personal space, to raise your threat level, to make you feel uncomfortable, to increase the adrenaline surge. As you know, clinically, from my standpoint as a physician, I know that during an adrenaline surge, you lose about at least 50% of what you've been taught, and you basically are acting on a reflex response. And our sensei, Sensei Richard Wing, quite often would turn off the lights in our dojo at DSI, Defense Science Institute, to change the environment and to raise our threat level during our training. We at SETDR continue to be excited about SETDR self-defense enhancement training in virtual reality as a platform where you continue to practice self-defense anytime, anywhere, when you want. The program is portable and compact. You can take it anywhere you travel and continue to practice your self-defense skills even during a pandemic and practicing your social distancing. With the Oculus Quest or Oculus Quest Rift headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it. The goal of Set the Aura is to have you to be able to neutralize an attack that is sudden, unpredictable, and random, to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, and circular movements, to avoid and place you into the opportunity's position of an advantage to improve your skills in timing, speed, and accuracy, and muscle memory. The goal is to develop a reflex response to a threat or to a stimulus to neutralize without hesitation, as with you would place your hand on a hot stove. You remove your hand without thinking as a reflex. This is what we're trying to develop with our program with SetVR. This is a platform whereby you continue to practice and utilize what you've been taught in techniques, in forms, and katas in your dojos, in the application of self-defense to practice anytime, anywhere, when you want.
Reggie, you know what's really cool? It's like four things. It's very progressive. It's a heck of a workout. It's fun. And it's educational because what we're doing with the History Journal portals and the questions and answers, you know.
Hey,
like,
Gary?
Yeah, AJ?
Yeah, it's more than fun. I was watching the kids in South Carolina use it, and, you know, they were, like, fighting over it. You know, they had so much fun with it. And, you know, I put it on. I was fighting against the kids to get it.
Well,
it's a great experience. It's a great workout, and it is fun.
AJ, they sold over 1 million units in Christmas. That's how powerful
I believe
it is. And, you know, you're like, you know, to me, you were hard to persuade to get it on, but we couldn't get it off your head because you were having fun, I can tell.
And it's a big head, too.
Well, Reggie, are you being safe from the walk into the hospital? Because, you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is a real doctor. We don't just call him Dr. Reginald Lee. He's an actual medical doctor working in a hospital. How are you doing, Reggie? You staying safe?
Yeah, we're staying safe. We're trying to work around these programs in regards to the pandemic, and hopefully we'll be able to, you know, control that and settle things down. So,
I can't wait to see you in October 7th and 8th for Roy Kerbin's event. We're honoring Mr. Judge Roy Kerbin. And by the way, Reggie, do you realize that we're doing a couple things that's really kind of crazy? We're going to honor Sylvester Stallone, Terry Funk from the WWF, and John Paul Genorio, the owner of the John Paul Mitchell team, with their honorary black belt. And we've got the United States Hall of Fame, Rocky DiRico's John Paul Mitchell Hall of Fame, the London Black Belt Hall of Fame, and the Texas Black Belt Hall of Fame doing their presentation. And we got General Tom Mulligan, Colonel Phil Torres, and Patrick Kelly, Gunny Sergeant Patrick Kelly, talking about leadership. We're not stopping there. We got the Guinness Book of World Records holder, Rick Stanford, going for the Guinness Book of World Records in breaking. And then we got Togi Hill, Arlene Lemus, and Herb Perez talking about the World Olympics. And, of course, we got Kata Wars and some incredible speakers coming in Saturday night and Friday. Sheriff Wayborn, Joe Corley, Jeff Smith, Eric Lee, Ron Marcini. He gets on and on. Jerry, I mean, it's going to be incredible. So, anyway, God bless you, Reggie, and God bless you, AJ. And thank you so much for what you've done with SetVR and that app.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Now, the last segment that we do on the Parts Unknown is kind of fun. Now, there's a man that I introduced earlier. His name was Dean Pyle, a NASCAR world champion. But he has an alias. He is known as the Wolverine. Now, what we do every week, we kind of take the leash off, and we kind of let him say what he means, and he means what he says, and he can back it up. So we ask him questions so he can just kind of let his opinion flow. Wolverine!
Yeah, Proud Hair.
Hey, Wolverine. I put the introduction on you better each week, so you need to put the check in the mail.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Wolverine. How does the Wolverine feel about the martial arts community relations with the military?
I mean, I feel like the relationship is fine. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that try to think that they're teaching a type of combatives, you know, but it's not, you know. But as far as my view and how that I train my class, I train my class with a military attitude. And what I mean by that is I want them to get a sense of realism and what it's really like to be in an actual confrontation where your life may depend on it. So we do a lot of training, you know, realistically, and that's why, you know, the Valley 2-0 and the Last Defense, which we train to the military. But we use isms a lot like that we do in the military, you know, keeping things up. Now, the Army don't, but the Marines do, using isms and training them, just giving them key points to think about to keep in their head to, you know, connect that mind and body, if you will, just so they have something to repeat and get theirself into position. And we like to establish a warrior's mindset. In most karate classes, people come in and, you know, they bow in, they start some calisthenics, you know, do some warm-ups, then go into stretches, and then go into basic practice, whether it be punching and kicking combinations or upper body punching and blocking combinations or lower body kicking. But what we do first is the very first thing is we say the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. That's number one and foremost. And then we repeat why we're here and why we chose to do this and why we won't quit. And then we establish a warrior's mindset. And I try to get those people to understand that the techniques that they are learning are for warriors. They are for defending their life. Even though, you know, in our personal classes that's off base, we have a lot of military here also, but, you know, we have a lot of civilians, so it's a mixed class, but they still need to learn why they're doing the technique and what it means. And a lot of martial arts water stuff down, and what I try to tell people is, you know, there is no truth to an actual fight, but a lot of martial arts systems try to teach that they've unlocked the key. So we train in a lot of different aspects and different scenarios that might happen to keep the realism there, because you don't know what's going to happen in a fight and you don't know what you got to change. And you have to make that decision that you can be more violent than your opponent, because when it comes to self-defense and fighting, you know, I've not seen a rule book to a street fight. I know a lot of times you'll say the most dangerous person that you'll encounter is a street fighter, which I always tell you, no, the most dangerous person you'll encounter is somebody that trains every day for the unexpected, trains to block, counterattack, and are willing to go the distance. One of the differences, I mean, one of the big things in martial arts and military is we have to train those people that no matter what's injured or what they're feeling, they have to continue to go get it, because if
Wolverine,
you lay down, you die. Yeah.
Wolverine. Okay, I'll say it very simply. There's eight words. They're very simple. Stop, maim, disable, destroy, kihan, kata, bunkai, kumite. And
okay.
If you know those four words, and you know those four words, you are teaching those. You're teaching karate. So anyway,
right.
Dean, God bless you, buddy.
Hey, hang on. I got it. Let me wrap up my segment. So I can end that in three words the way we do it for the street and to represent the United States Marine Corps. Three words when you face your attacker. Kill, kill, kill. Hoo-ah! That's how that goes.
We can't
you don't have to
kill,
worry
kill,
about
kill,
all
kill.
That other stuff.
We have to say destroy. We say stop, maim, disable, destroy.
Because Killer is too violent, Wolverine.
That's the difference in a warrior. That's the difference. That's the difference.
I know, but you can't say kill. So thank you, Wolverine.
Why we always got to be centered?
Wolverine, you can't say
I'm off the leash.
Well, you can't say
kill. I'm just telling you what we say. I'm just telling you what we say.
I know. So start saying destroy. Same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was the amazing Wolverine. And, you know, Dean Powell's and Wolverine's the same man, but we separate them for your enjoyment. Now I want to bring back my special guest. Colonel, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut it short, but I want to hit you with one name, and you got 2 minutes to talk about it. It's about Bill Hayes.
Bill Hayes. I've described him in various forums, and I've always described Bill Hayes the same way, perfection in motion. I met him after I got back from Vietnam in 69, and I was at Camp Lejeune teaching a karate class on one side of the big gym at Camp Lejeune, Getchi Field House. And on the other side, Bill Hayes was teaching a class. I had never met him. We had just both got back from Vietnam sometime that year or earlier. And what I saw was nothing but perfect technique. I couldn't see where his punch. I could see where his punch started, and I could see where his punch ended. I could see where his kick started, and I could see where the kick ended, but I didn't see anything in between. That's how fast, how fluid he was. So what I did, I stopped my class on that side of the gym and went over to and took them over to the other side of the gym just so they can watch perfection in motion, if that tells you what I think of
it. Perfection in motion. That's beautiful.
That was in 1969.
Colonel, I've enjoyed tonight so much, and I've enjoyed the six. I enjoyed the six introducing themselves to you and you being a part of the radio show, and a big thank you to Hotsy Jesse Bowen and, of course, the six and Reggie Lee. And I just want to say thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in October in your special speaking on leadership and what you do for America. And you are truly an American hero. Ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Well, thank you, sir. But I would like about 30 seconds to answer a question you ask everybody else.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir.
The connection between the military and the martial arts. And it's the end. Everybody answer it to some degree, but the answer is really straightforward and simple. I can speak for the Marine Corps, and I'm sure it's similar to the other services. But from a Marine Corps perspective, the code of Bushido and the code of the Marine Corps are the same. So there's a symbiotic connection from the very first thought.
Yes, sir. Well, that is incredible. I appreciate your wisdom.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, Colonel.
I understood.
Don't forget, guys, October 7th and 8th, Judge Roy Kerman, the man who invented the two-point kick, roasts in tribute at the West Chase Marriott in Houston, Texas. And for more information, you can call directly the museum, 713-483-0476, and you can actually meet in person AJ Perry, Karen Flatcher, Dean Pyle, and the Colonel. So, ladies and
gentlemen, looking forward to seeing you, Colonel.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to seeing the two of you and everybody else.
Yes, sir.
Well, we're gonna have a great time. And ladies and gentlemen, it's been so special tonight being in your homes. Every Tuesday night, you allow us to go ahead and share with you sport karate stories. Now, you can actually go to Facebook now and type in sport karate stories, and you can read some incredible stories. But, ladies and gentlemen, as I say every week, and I mean it from the heart, mahalo and aloha. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night,
mahalo.
Everyone.
Good night. Hoorah.
Hoorah.
Sanctify.